This is Karen Fresco returning with the Herald and Review dated August 10, 2016. We continue now with the death notices. Louise A. Cotton, 96, of Beloit, Wisconsin. At Louise's request, there will be no services. Donations or gifts may be given to a charity of your choice in her memory. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.dailymurphywisch.com. Robert Walter Eagleton, Decatur. Robert Walter Eagleton, 94, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday evening, August 7, 2016, at Symphony of Decatur. A graveside service to celebrate and honor Bob's life will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 13, 2016, at Graceland Cemetery, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard and the U.S. Army. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel on Saturday. Memorials can be made to the Macon County Honor Guard. Messages of condolence can be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. William Raymond Edmiston, Decatur. William Raymond Edmiston, 74, of Decatur, Illinois, formerly of Pekin, Illinois, passed away Sunday, August 7, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. There will be no services. Cremation rites to be accorded. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are assisting the family. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brintlingerandearl.com. Peggy Ann Riley, Decatur. Peggy Ann Riley, 81, of Decatur, died at 11:46 p.m. Saturday, August 6, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside service will be 2 p.m. Friday, August 12, 2016, at Harristown Township Cemetery, with visitation 1 hour before at St. John's Lutheran Church, 2727 North Union, Decatur, Illinois. Tanzias Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of arrangements. Sign the guest book at www.tlcelebratingeverydaylife.com. Carl Ray Taylor, Brownstown. Carl Ray Taylor, 81, of Palmer, passed away on Monday, August 8, 2016, at 12:30 p.m. at Life's Journey Senior Living in Taylorville. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, August 10, 2016, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville, Illinois. Graveside services will be held on Thursday, August 11, 2016, at 10 a.m. at Anderson Cemetery in Palmer, Illinois, with James Stanley officiating. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association Greater Illinois Chapter, 2309 West White Oaks Drive, Suite E, Springfield, Illinois, 62704. Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville is assisting the family with arrangements. Sign online guest book at www.suttonmemorialhome.com. Alvis L. Thompson, Decatur. Alvis L. Thompson, 39, for the 54th time, 93, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, August 6, 2016, in Decatur Memorial. Funeral service to celebrate Al's life will be 11 a.m. Friday, August 12, 2016, in the First General Baptist Church, 2825 South Baltimore Avenue, Decatur, Illinois, with Pastor Randall Garrett officiating. Visitation will be 9 to 11 a.m. Friday in the church. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials are suggested to Central Illinois Honor Flight. The family of Elvis L. Thompson is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois. Send condolences to the family at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. In other news, headline, The Voice, NWS has new computerized sound. This is by Kevin Barlow, Lee News Service writer. Lincoln, the National Weather Service has found a new voice. Audio warnings, watches, weather forecasts, observations, amber alerts, and other information are now shared by the voice of PAL, a computerized message system from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. PAL replaces Perfect PAL, Craig, Donna, and Tom, the names of previous synthesized voices used by NOAA to share emergency information 24 hours a day from local NWS centers. The new voice has been online at the NWS office in Lincoln for about a month. It took about 12 hours to install, NWS meteorologist Chris Gielhart said. We are still making some adjustments with it because every time we hear a mispronunciation, we want to correct it, Gielhart said. Illinois is filled with small towns and counties where the name is not pronounced as it is spelled, so we correct those as we come across them. NOAA Weather Radio has more than 1,025 transmitters serving 95% of the U.S. population, covering all 50 states, adjacent coastal waters, and the territories of Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, and Saipan. The NWA office in Lincoln serves 35 central Illinois counties. The problem was that the equipment we were using has been in existence since the late 1990s, said Gielhart, who programmed the new system. The company that made it has sold off its business to someone else, and it was becoming antiquated because we were still using late 1990s-era computers with it. The new system was integrated into the existing system used for severe weather warnings and notifications, he said. Warning coordination meteorologist Chris Miller said implementation of the new system went smoothly. We have had a lot of positive feedback because the new voice is more conversational, he said. The older one sounded a little more computer-like and choppy. The new system will run parallel to the old system for 60 days, Miller said. We do that just to make sure there are no major problems or issues, and if we come across a problem, we can quickly switch back to the old system so there are no breakdowns, he said. The last thing you want in a severe weather situation is something going wrong and not being able to get information out. But we haven't had any problems. From the introduction of NOAA Weather Radio in the 1960s through 1997, nearly all of the voices heard in the broadcasts were those of meteorologists from NWS offices. The messages were manually recorded and set on a looping broadcast cycle. Eventually, a synthesized voice, Perfect PAL, read text announcements. In 2002, the NWS contracted with Siemens Information and Communication and Speech Works to introduce more natural voices. The changes added one male voice, dubbed Craig, one female voice, Donna, and most recently, Tom. The Lincoln office covers the counties of Cass, Champaign, Christian, Clark, Clay, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Fulton, Jasper, Knox, Lawrence, Logan, McLean, Macon, Marshall, Mason, Menard, Morgan, Moultrie, Peoria, Piatt, Richland, Sagamon, Schuyler, Scott, Shelby, Stark, Tazewell, Vermilion, and Woodford. Headline: Farmers Advised to Look Inside the Ground. Chris Luzvardi, H&R Staff Writer. Oakley. Dennis Bork wants to find the best way to improve soil health on his farm, and in the process, boost crop productivity. He is working on a 5-year study with the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District to test different methods of farming, including planting cover crops. In the past 2 years on his family farm near Oakley, Bork has planted annual rye and cereal rye, which is proving to be one of the most popular cover crops among area farmers. "We're up to whatever we can learn," Bork said Tuesday during a field day organized by the University of Illinois Extension Macon County office. "We're willing to try some different things out here." Bork said he is interested in seeing what the yield difference for corn and soybeans will be as cover crops are grown, primarily during the winter. "Some of the changes to the soil are becoming noticeable, but it can be slow to change," said Roger Windhorn, a soil health consultant. "The soil has been developing into the condition it is in now for thousands of years," which Windhorn said shows why changes aren't instantaneous. "Change is needed to break up the soil and avoid compaction," Windhorn said, while standing in 2 14-inch pits dug in the middle of a soybean. "Cover crops can add organic matter to the soil," Windhorn said. "I do like the effect they have on the soil," Windhorn said. "Anytime you can add organic matter to the soil, you're going to improve soil health. Soil that is broken up can provide openings for plant roots, water, insects, and nutrients to move through the ground as needed," Windhorn said. "Seeing how plants are growing above ground provides just half the picture," said Doug Gucker, a local food systems and small farms educator with the extension. Gucker said farmers should dig into their fields for a clearer idea of what's happening that can affect crop production. "We need to be working on this and see what's going on in the soil," Gucker said. The use of cover crops is one method that is being studied through the Soil Health Partnership, an initiative of the National Corn Growers Association, said Jim Iserman, the Illinois field manager for the partnership. "We can look at different management types," Iserman said. "Cover crops are primarily what farmers are looking at. The best way to do this is for farmers to voluntarily want to do the practices." The Soil Health Partnership will take part in a field day with the University of Illinois Extension in Christian County, scheduled for 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, August 19, at the Dudley Smith Farm between Taylorville and Pena. More information can be found by contacting Gary Letterly at letterly@illinois.edu or calling 217-287-7246. Dear Abby, couple's spare bedroom is no longer open for guests. Jean Phillips for the Herald and Review. Dear Abby, we are a married couple in our 60s and have no close family. Before retirement, we would playfully tease each other that when we retired, we'd turn our spare bedroom into a fun fantasy adult room. Fast forward. We now have our special room, and we're having a blast. Well, we got a call from distant relatives who will be heading our way, and they asked to stay with us for a few days. How do we explain that we have no room for them without causing problems? Discreet in Washington. Dear Discreet, be honest to a degree. After telling them that you are unable to accommodate them, explain that because you have turned the spare bedroom into an entertainment center, it is no longer set up for guests, but you'd love to see them while they're in town and take them out for dinner. Just remember, that if you are asked, you do not have to reveal what kind of games you are playing there. Prosthetics. Dear Abby, I'm curious to know your thoughts regarding this dating situation. If a person has a prosthetic and the device isn't obvious, when and how would you recommend it be disclosed to the dating partner? Is it too much information to reveal on a first date? Would it be all right to wait a couple of dates, see how they go, and then reveal the fact? Curious in Lynchburg. Dear Curious, I see no reason to reveal something like this on a first or even second date, and certainly not with a virtual stranger. Prosthetics of various kinds are common, but few people are willing to discuss the fact that their appearance has been enhanced with false teeth, caps and veneers, breast implants, Botox, or a hair transplant. People are more than a prosthetic, so new acquaintances should get to know the person before receiving that information. Political debate. Dear Abby, this politically divisive year has fueled a debate in our family. I like to put a political sticker on my car on a magnet. That way I can remove it when I want. One of my relatives won't ride in my car if I have my sticker on. I say it's my car and I can put what I want on it. He says I should be sensitive to others' feelings when they are in the car. What do you think? Politically stumped. Dear Politically Stumped, you have a right to exercise your freedom of expression. If your relative prefers not to ride in a car with a bumper sticker advertising the other political party, then he or she should feel free to arrange for alternative transportation. Now we'll fill in with some items from the Decatur Tribune Online, August 10, 2016. Grow Decatur. Thanks to Larry Altenbaumer, Bruce Nims, and Ellen Hearn for sitting down with me and updating what's been happening with the Grow Decatur group in their efforts to, as the name indicates, grow Decatur. What I found especially interesting was a survey that was collected online by solicitation of voluntary subjects drawn from the general population. Drawn from the general population of the Decatur area during April of this year, a net sample involves 567 subjects. The breakdown was female 67.2%, male 32.8%, white 76.4%, and black/AA 16.3%. According to the survey results, more than 70% of the participants were positive about living in the Decatur area, and less than 16% of the total survey were negative. With all of the whining and complaining about Decatur that we read and hear these days, it would almost seem these percentages should be reversed. I guess that shows you that a small number of dissatisfied residents are making all of the negative noise. One other aspect of the survey data that I found especially telling was that residents 18 to 22 are significantly more negative about Decatur than the average participants, and that young women are more negative than men in the same age group. By the age of 30, people are generally. Of course, the survey included 567 subjects, so out of the much larger population, attitudes about our city are subject to debate. My viewpoint column on page 3 of this week's print edition of the Decatur Tribune deals with a critical aspect of what Grow Decatur has found in their efforts to define problem areas and work on a plan to resolve those problems. Al Scheider. Al Scheider has announced that he is a candidate for a seat on the District Number 61 School Board in next April's election. Scheider is a 25-year resident of Decatur and District 61, and the first candidate to announce. Before sending his announcement out to all the media, Scheider came to my office to talk about his candidacy and the reason he is running. My first question to him was, Are you running because of Superintendent Lisa Taylor being forced out of her job earlier this year? Scheider said he had actually made up his mind to run for the board before the controversy with Taylor happened. He also said he couldn't make an accurate judgment on whether or not the action of four board members to not renew her contract, which resulted in Taylor securing a position in another district, was right or wrong, because he does not have access to the same information the board members had in the closed executive sessions. Last week's meeting with Scheider was the first time I had met with him, but from what he told me, it seems to me that he wants to serve on the school board for the right reason, to bring his educational background and expertise to help the school board move forward. Getter says no. That's Getter, G-O-E-T-T-E-R. There's been some speculation recently that former Decatur School Board President Jackie Getter, who held that position 15 or 20 years ago, might challenge Mayor Julie Moore Wolf in the mayor's race. Getter spoke out in the recent school board controversy involving Superintendent Lisa Taylor and also appeared before the City Council and sharply criticized City Manager Tim Gleason. WSOY's Brian Byers mentioned to me on last Thursday's City Hall Insider Hour that he had talked with Getter and she told him that she had no interest in running for mayor. She said that her recent public remarks were as a private citizen and she wasn't laying the groundwork for another run at a public office. I've attended all 31 Decatur celebrations, but I can't remember a celebration weekend that had better weather for the event than last weekend. Considering all of the really hot weather we've had, it was perfect. I don't spend nearly as much time at the celebration as I did for the first 25 years, where I was downtown every minute of every day when the event was going on. Some of the reason for that is the Tribune office, especially when it was on North Park Street. It was right in the middle of all of the activities, and I worked at the office most of the hours during the celebration. Our office is now located at 132 South Water Street, which is at the southern edge of the event. Actually, the golden oldies entertainment that I enjoyed in the beginning years was from the 1950s and 1960s. I think most of those entertainers are either dead or no longer performing. I'll have to confess that except for .38 Special, the band, not the gun, I didn't recognize any of the entertainment this year, and I only recognized .38 Special by name, not because I remember any of their songs. However, I think there are younger generations that do recognize and enjoy the entertainment. And that's probably the way it should be and will be from now on. I will have to admit that I have no problem remembering where the food I enjoy is located. My favorite is the chicken and rice on North Park Street. Standing behind me in line at the Thai Grill was City Councilman Pat McDaniel, who told me that some police officers had been coming up to him and expressing their appreciation for his Support the Police Blue Ribbon campaign. That was a solid idea, and I can understand why police officers would appreciate it, and so do I. Letters to the editor. Scrapbook article stirs memories of Chaps Amusement Park. Dear Paul, your scrapbook article, August 3rd, sure stirred childhood memories. I seem to remember a small blue train at Chaps that was much smaller than Lil Rebel. The cars were about the width of a coaster wagon, an open top. The engine had a diesel train appearance. Maybe others remember it too. I remember the laughing lady standing at the entrance to the bingo building, or tent. That building is just left of the Ferris wheel in the picture on page 5. I also remember a Chaps Market on the northwest corner at Water and Garfield in the early 50s. It was always fun skating at the Chaps roller rink. I remember Hayes Freight Lines that you mention in the picture. I also remember Decatur Cartage Company, just south of Hayes. The picture doesn't show it, so it must have come along a few years after the picture was taken. Hayes had green trucks and Decatur had red ones. Little boy's memories from the early 50s. I remember Dolan's Cafe in the Y, where Maine and water came together across from Chaps. In the early 50s, a friend, John Hendricks, and I would go in there after delivering my Sunday H&R route, and have a grilled sweet roll with lots of butter, or breakfast sometimes. Does anyone remember the softball park behind west of Chaps Amusement Park? We lived just south of there on Church Street, and on game night we could see the lights and hear the cheers when someone got a hit or ran home. Keep the Tribunes coming, Paul. We love them. Dan Weber, Mount Zion. This you might enjoy. This article is from the Herald and Review. Study reveals coaches the top rule breakers. Key findings in the Temple University Sport Industry Research Center study of 554 NCAA Division I major infraction cases between 1953 and 2014. 82.9% of the cases, 459 of 554, involved football, men's basketball, or both. Sports most frequently included in major infraction cases: men's basketball, 270, or 49%, football, 259, or 47%, women's basketball, 38, 7%, men's track and field, 41, 7%, and baseball, 32, 6%. 73% of cases involved one sport. 84% of major infraction cases involved violations by coaches. Most common infractions: recruiting inducements, 57%, impermissible benefits, 54%, other recruiting violations, 48%, unethical conduct, 46%, lack of institutional control, 27%, exceeding financial aid, 25%, ineligible participation, 22%. The percentage indicates how often that infraction type was part of a case. Note that one case may have multiple. Most common penalties: probation, 87%, public reprimand and censure, 86%, recruiting restrictions, 50%, scholarship reduction, 46%, postseason ban, 42%, show cause order, 28%, wins vacated / contests forfeited, 21%. The Southeastern Conference was the most penalized conference at 8% of the cases. The Pac-12 and Big Ten were next at 7%. Schools from the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC accounted for 39.9% of the cases. Two schools had 9 cases since 1953, Arizona State and SMU, though the Mustangs now have 10. 5 schools had 7 cases. 77 schools had 1 case. This has been Karen Fresco with the Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune of August 10, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.